Hello and welcome to the Warrior Addict Meet the Warriors podcast series. My name is John Axworthy. I'm a journalist and proud member of the Warrior Addict team, where I try my best to contribute some entertaining musings on the relationship that guys have with the practice. Personally, I'm just starting out on my yoga journey and have quickly become aware of what it can do for you physically and mentally after writing stories about how the world of football, one of my other great passions, was seeing more and more professionals take up yoga to prolong careers and improve their game. One of the other great things about working with Warrior Addict is that it also gives me the opportunity to talk to some amazing people, which is why I'm stoked to be here speaking to the brilliant Tracy Chaplin. Hi, Tracy.
Hello, John.
Hi. Just a little bit of background about Tracy. He is the grandson of the comedy genius Charlie Chaplin and was raised in the southwest of France on a farm surrounded by goats and chickens to the age of 12, and then in Switzerland by his father in the samurai spirit. He's had an exciting career as a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu professional, winning the 2005 European Championships, and is now a Hatha Yoga teacher. Tracy runs Hatha Yoga workshops and retreats around the world, and we're absolutely thrilled that he has taken the time out to speak with us today. Thanks a lot for your time today, Tracy. We'll get straight on with things. Firstly, obviously you're one of 24 grandchildren of the genius comic actor, filmmaker and composer, the Charlie Chaplin. How was it growing up with this legacy?
Well, it was... my father never spoke about him. So I discovered it very late.
Right.
And so it was quite a surprise because one day my sisters came and said that I was... showed me a picture of this guy and said... he's a grandfather. And I said, no, he's not my grandfather.
Seriously?
Yeah, I thought it was another actor, a French actor.
Oh, my God.
Because once when I was in my grandmother's house, and they said, well, we're going to watch a film of your grandfather, of Una's husband. I thought, oh, finally, we're going to see a face on this guy who died. And they didn't put on a Charlie Chaplin film. They must have changed their mind without telling me. And they put a film with Jean Rochefort, who's a great French actor.
Right.
And I thought it was him. I thought Jean Rochefort was my grandmother's husband.
My God, that's amazing. So you weren't aware of the fact that Charlie Chaplin was your grandfather until you were how old?
Until I was probably around nine.
Okay.
Nine, because okay. Then it was the 100 years of Charlie Chaplin, and then my parents were invited to a lot of festivals, and then I had to realize this right. New fact.
That's fascinating. It really is. Since then, have you watched all his movies and stuff like that, or is it just something that, you know, obviously he was your grandfather, that's just a fact, and you've kind of moved on from that?
Yeah, basically moved on. I don't think I have seen all his movies. I've seen the most known ones, probably.
Right.
But I'm not his number one fan, I must say.
Okay. Well, I have to say, one thing he does seem to have passed on to you, because I know he was known for his stunts and his physicality on screen occasionally, was the fact that, you know, you were the 2005 winner of the European Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Championships. Before we get into your yoga, can you just give us a quick one-on-one on Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for those who don't know exactly what it is?
Well, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is it looks a lot like judo. It's an art of grappling, of engaging in very close combat, and basically it's like doing chess with the body.
Right.
And you're using a lot of leverage, so you're not using strength. You use leverage instead of strength. You use timing instead of speed. So it's a great martial art where anybody can do it.
Right, basically. Okay.
You don't need to be an athlete. You don't need to do the splits, or you don't need to be a bodybuilder or whatever. You can. It's a lot of technique, and yeah, it's like a science.
That's amazing.
It's like yoga. If you do it the right way, it works.
I was going to say that just as you were describing it, the two disciplines do sound quite similar, actually.
Yeah, they're very similar. Maybe the difference between jiu-jitsu is if we do jiu-jitsu together, I'm going to try and bring your body out of alignment.
Right.
So you will not be able to end the fight. I'll bring you out of alignment. Okay. And in yoga, I'm going to try and bring you in alignment. So it's like the...
Yeah, I can see. I can see how one would complement the other in some way, actually.
Yeah, very complimentary.
Which came first, the jiu-jitsu or the yoga, or did the two combine at the same time, or?
Well, the jiu-jitsu came later, but martial arts came quite early.
Right.
My dad used to do some karate, and he used to teach me some martial arts and some form of stretching and yoga that he mixed up.
Okay.
Yeah, it was and a meditation, of course.
Right.
So it was all sort of mixed up.
You mentioned your dad,
maybe teenager.
Right. You mentioned your dad. Then obviously we have also said that you had quite an unusual upbringing, as you were raised in the samurai spirit. Can you kind of let us into exactly what this was, how that affected your early years?
Yeah, my dad is very passionate about Eastern philosophy, and especially the Zen school of thought, and I would probably say of no thought.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, he used to, his bedtime stories were Zen stories.
Oh wow!
That were some were fun, some were funny, some were completely not comprehensible. And so he used to wake us up, make us stretch, sometimes before the night, make us stretch a little bit, do a few yoga pose. And I used to see him around doing headstands, meditating in lotus pose for an hour every day, even if he was sick, if it rained, if it was snowing, he didn't care. He would do his hour zazen.
That's amazing.
Meditation.
I don't think I ever saw my dad in a headstand, I have to say. That's quite something.
Yeah, it's quite funny, yeah.
So those kind of bedtime stories, you said you had some favorite ones. Like what kind of Zen stories did he tell you?
Well, a lot of the Zen stories I think they can be found in the book called Zen Flesh and Bones.
Right.
And a lot of Zen stories are actually there's been a lot of cross training in between samurais and Zen monks.
Okay.
Because of the samurais having to deal with death every day, every hour, every second. Like they have one sword is to kill the enemy. And they have one sword, a smaller sword, is to kill themselves if they dishonor themselves.
Right.
There's so many reasons to dishonor yourself.
Right.
Even if your master dishonors himself, you'll have to kill yourself if you're his servant. So these people lived with death all the time, and we know that if you're tense, if you're scared of death, you're tense, then you're going to use too much muscle, you'll forget your technique, and you won't be relaxed, and the movements won't flow. So a lot of samurais went to Zen monks to train Zen to finally gain this spirit of no thought. And actually some Zen monks thought that they wanted to taste a little bit more the truth of life and death.
Right.
Other than in meditation, to help their meditation practice evolve. So they did some sword fighting. But mostly samurais did. It's more the samurais that did some Zen training.
Right. Okay. So, do you think that the samurai spirit did that contribute to the path that led you to both jiu-jitsu and yoga?
Yeah, totally. I when I look at it now, it looks like I didn't have a choice.
Your destiny was set.
I always thought it was my choice.
Right.
But now that I look back, I think, well, no, it was. I was influenced.
Right.
It was all these stories when I was a kid. I said, yeah, I want to be a samurai. And people told me, yeah, but you're not Japanese. You can't be a samurai. And then I was crazy about martial arts and about meditation.
Yeah, it sounds like it was always in your destiny, I think, to be fair, wasn't it?
And
why did Hatha Yoga in particular resonate with you, and how were you introduced to it?
Well, like I said, my dad used to do this sort of yoga, stretching, a little bit of yoga when we were kids, but I never gave it much notice, and I didn't really practice that much. But when I was about 13, I had a hip operation, and I become very fat. I was like overweight,
right.
And I couldn't properly... I couldn't put on weight on my leg, and I became very, very inflexible. And so my dad saw this and said, well, you have to start meditating. And that helped a lot. My hips, my flexibility, just meditating.
Right.
And then because of having an imbalance in the hip, my knee started to hurt a lot. And so the doctor started speaking about operating. And I knew that this, for me, the hip operation was the last operation I wanted to do on my body, because I saw the loss of flexibility and stuff.
Right.
So my dad came up with this special yoga, very slow yoga, very mindful, like very mindful on the breath, very easy, slow yoga.
Yeah.
And we did it every day for like 6 months. And my knees were great, were fantastic.
Oh, that's incredible.
But still, when my knees were fantastic, then I came back just to meditating and doing martial arts. I had to wait much later on to really get into yoga.
Right.
For me, yoga was just something you do to get your body back into shape. And then once it's back, once your injuries are back, well, then you just go to...
Right, yeah, okay. How long have you been teaching yoga for?
I started when my daughter was just born, so it's about 6 years.
Right, okay.
And before that I used to teach martial arts.
Right. Just hearing you mention your daughter there, I'm not sure if you have any other children, but do you as your father did with you, do you do yoga with your children or what?
Yeah, my kids actually do a little bit of yoga and a little bit of martial arts.
Right, okay.
There's some Zen stories going on for bedtime as well.
So you're carrying on
just
the tradition.
Slowly. But just giving them, especially my son, he's like very tall and the hamstrings starting to tighten.
Right.
When you grow fast, the hamstrings. So yoga is great for them.
Okay.
And especially the all the new technology, even at school.
Yeah.
The rounding of the shoulders. So yoga is really the antidote for all this new technology to bring back the shoulders back.
Okay. I mean, maybe I should start introducing my kids to yoga then. In that case, because I think they have. I think they suffer from that problem. To be fair. So you think yoga can be good, even for kids, it can be obviously fantastic for posture and just general overall shape of the body.
Just learning how to breathe when you're angry.
Right.
Breathe when your own emotions are going and giving your emotions space I would think a lot of mindfulness, awareness is very good for kids. And of course, yoga postures can give confidence in kids. Especially I would see kids who have low confidence.
Yeah, okay.
And if they do some yoga, some yoga poses, and they have a good skilled teacher who's like coaching them, and
yeah,
I think it do wonders.
Just going back to your yoga teaching as well, is there anything that you would say makes your yoga teaching unique and individual to you?
Yes, of course. Well, I think everybody teaches yoga in a unique way.
Yeah.
Because we're all filters. And well, my path is when I teach yoga, it's a lot of there's a lot of martial arts behind it, a lot
right.
of the samurai spirit, and I've been in a lot of qigong, tai chi, some animal postures, and
right.
I love all the energy side of it, and a lot of meditation. I try to put everything in there. Meditation, relaxation. I really like a complete class.
Right.
Not just yoga postures, because it's interesting to see with what's behind.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that sounds amazing. Actually, you also I noticed you offer invisible yoga teacher training. Can you explain what this is?
It's I'm interested the yoga that you cannot see. Like what's happening deep in the body.
Right.
Obviously, you can see in the postures. You can start looking at the skin, where the skin is going, but a lot of the stuff is happening inside, and so it's the invisible side of yoga. Of a lot, I would call it like it's an ugly name, so I prefer invisible yoga. But it would be like mental yoga.
Okay.
Meaning if you're thinking, it's probably not yoga you're doing.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And it's
now that's Zen. I like it.
in samurai they would say, if you think, you're dead.
Right.
If you're in the head, you're dead. So it's bringing back the awareness back to the breath. And the breath is invisible. While we can see it, the reactions on the body, the tummy moving. But it's like Lao Tzu. He was saying that nobody's breathing through the heels.
Right, okay.
And this is 2,500 years ago.
Right.
So already there, they had problems of people being too much in the head and in the shoulders.
Right.
So I think a lot of visualization, a lot of invisible stuff, it helps wonders on improving on the mat. But what I'm interested in is what's happening to the people off the mat. Is it, if are they just relaxing, if they're just having a good workout and a good relaxation, or is this improving other domains in their life? That's what I'm interested to see, experiment.
That's fascinating, actually. So also that kind of keys back into the whole samurai spirit that you were talking about before, about the whole no thought.
Yes.
And obviously we hear a lot about mindfulness these days. I mean, obviously you've been doing what we call, or what many people call mindfulness. You've been doing that for a long, long time now. I guess it's keying back into that slightly. Is it just the fact that it's just about being present with no thought and being aware of breath and things like that?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So sometimes there is thought. There are thoughts. It's not pushing away thoughts, because then more thoughts come. Or it's not like a gymnastic. It's exactly what you're saying. It's just letting, if there's thoughts coming in,
yeah.
Especially if it's negative thoughts.
Yeah.
Like what happens when people go to competition or do something there. They have thoughts like, you're not ready, you're not good enough, you have nothing to do here, it's not your place. And this can happen not even competition, going at work, or just meeting new people. And these thoughts, you don't have to listen to them. I think a yogi is is someone who listens less and less to his own thoughts.
Right, okay.
He's then less and less tuned to his own radio inside.
Okay.
Like, he knows the old record player. You're not good enough. And slowly, slowly letting them go and being more interested in the body, in the breath, in the sensations in your hands. It's like, it's deep listening, right. I think. Meditation is like deep listening. You could listen to somebody and listen to the context of what they're saying. And it's interesting, but it's superficial. Or you could really listen to somebody and you're listening to the tone of the voice. You're listening to the way he pauses in each word. And where does this voice come? Is it more from the throat? If it's coming from the belly?
Right.
That has often more to say about what actually the person is saying.
Okay, that's really interesting. Actually, I'd say.
So in martial arts, you have to read somebody's body because he's going to try and hurt you. So you need to know this. And in yoga as well, when you do a yoga class, people say, "No, I can't do this pose."
Right.
And sometimes you look at the body and they want to try. So sometimes you have to push them a little bit. Sometimes there's people who want to try too hard, and you have to. Their body is saying, "No, I'm not ready yet." So you have to slow them down a little bit.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's fascinating, actually. I was mentioning in the intro that you're based in Lausanne. How is the yoga scene in Lausanne, and how does it differ from cities like London or LA or places like that?
Well, I would say it's quite different than LA.
Yeah.
Like a yoga class here, it's as well the Swiss mentality is more discreet.
Right.
Nobody likes to go in the front row.
Right. Okay. Okay. That sounds very British as well, actually.
Yeah, that sounds very British.
Yeah.
As well. And nobody's interested in being first, and people just want to be at the back row. They love the back row.
Right.
I think in America, you go to New York, you're going to fight to get in the front row if you're not there. 30 minutes before, you can forget being in the front row.
Right.
And there's a little bit more, less maybe interaction maybe with the people.
Okay.
It's different mentality, so you got to push them a little bit more to have some reaction.
Right.
It takes them a long time to laugh at you, at my jokes anyway. Maybe my jokes are not funny.
So. Well, it sounds like in some ways it sounds like it sounds like that's quite suited to your practice, and in other ways maybe not so much. I don't know.
Yeah, it is in a way that I find with this, but it differs with this French German and the French Italian This Lausanne is the Swiss French, so it's the,
right.
There's the Swiss Italian, Swiss German,
okay,
and the French part, French speaking part of Switzerland,
right? Okay.
Well, they're quite they're reserved. They take their time. Sometimes they need 2 months before stepping in to your class, but
right.
Once they start coming, they stick.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's sort of nice in one way.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you do with your time when you're not practicing or teaching yoga? What do you like to do?
Playing with my kids.
Right.
Being in nature. I'm reading. I love listening to conferences. It seems that I'm an action person because I did a lot of martial arts and yoga, but I'm more, contemplative.
Right, okay.
I like watching old movies, just being outside. I can spend time just looking at trees.
Right. I can relate to that, absolutely. So do your kids like being in the outdoors as well? Have they taken that from you, the fact that I assume... I'm not sure what ages they are, but are they would they rather be outdoors than inside on a games console?
Yeah, though sometimes you might have to
drag them off
them a little bit. Yeah. It's like sometimes it's like the bath.
Right.
Never want to go in.
Yeah.
And but never want to come out.
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes you need the little extra motivation to go out. They want to know where we're going. Not the same park as yesterday.
Right.
Okay. Well, mountains. Is there a playground or?
Yeah.
They want to know everything before.
Okay.
So it's like jiu-jitsu. I have to trick them.
Okay. That's where your jiu-jitsu training comes in these days. Okay.
Yes.
I get you. And I was also reading that you recently spent some time in India. I was just wondering what the purpose of your trip was and what was the most kind of salient experience you took from your time there.
The purpose was I wanted to take some people from Switzerland to like a week immersion in India, and with a friend who does this every year. He's a doctor, and we wanted to teach some yoga, speak about Ayurveda and essential oils and the philosophy, Bhagavad Gita, Yoga Sutras.
Right.
Want to give the chance for some people to come to India and just for a week have an immersion in yoga and yoga philosophy.
Right, okay. Whereabouts in India were you?
On this trip to India, what was quite amazing. Well, everything is amazing in India.
Yeah.
You're just walking around and you see things, the positive and negative, the beauty and the plastic bags everywhere.
Yeah, sure.
It's contrast. Yes, I think the highlight of this adventure was we bring in a sort of shamanic yogi who reads your chakras by reading your pulse.
Wow.
And he pretty much read us all, and we
really
we couldn't hide. he spotted us out very quick in our strengths and especially our weaknesses.
That's amazing. Okay. Just going back as well, just finally to you're talking about your father's samurai stories. Are there any other of your favorite samurai stories that you could tell us at all?
Yeah, of course. Well, this is the story is a master who sends his servant to bring a present to another master, and the servant is not trained in martial arts or nothing, but he still has to wear the two swords because he's on a noble deed. He has to dress properly, and dressing properly incorporates the two swords, even though he doesn't know how to use them.
Okay.
And it's quite a trip, and he comes to a bridge, and there's a samurai on this bridge. And this is some angry samurai who's just looking for trouble. And he tells the servant, "I can't let you pass. You have to confront me. We have to have a fight." And the servant says, "Well, this is ridiculous. I don't do martial arts. I don't do sword fighting. I'm just a poor servant for my master. I need to bring this gift, and it's very important. I'll bring great dishonor to my master if I don't bring this gift." And the samurai says, "I don't care. You're wearing two swords. That means you know how to fight, and you're going to fight me." And the servant says, "Well, please, I need to bring this gift. It's so important. My master will be dishonored, and I don't want to dishonor my master if I can't bring this gift." So he tells, "I'll come back and I'll confront you. But please let me give this gift first. I really need to give this gift." So the samurai says, "Okay,
okay,
be off with you." And he goes to the other master, gives the gift, gets the mission is accomplished.
Yeah.
And so he's really relieved. And he says, well, I did a promise to the samurai, I have to go back. So he says, well, I can die peacefully now because I accomplished my mission. So he goes back to the bridge and he sees the samurai, he says, well, I'm ready now. And he just puts him down, he puts himself in a nice pose because he thinks, well, I'm going to get killed, but I need to be, it has to be beautiful. Because I don't want to dishonor my master. So I have to at least put myself in a pose that reflects some strength, honor, and a good attitude. So he puts himself in this pose, very relaxed, ready to die. And he just waits, totally at peace, in the state of no mind. And the samurai looks at him, and the samurai starts sweating because he sees this guy so calm, so alive, so aware, that he says, but this is not the same guy. This is a master. This is a true master. There's no way I can attack him. There's no opening in his guard, in this way he's standing. It's just... So the samurai kneels down and says, I'm sorry, I cannot win this fight. I didn't know you were a master. Please, just let me go. And the servant is surprised and goes back to his master.
Oh, it's amazing. I can see why children would love those stories. I really can. No, that's amazing. It's absolutely fascinating. Okay, Tracy, our time's almost up. Just like to explain, I've been speaking today with Tracy Chaplin, who's based in Lausanne, where he teaches workshops, retreats, and yoga teacher training courses. If listeners would like to get in touch with Tracy, they can go to www.tracychaplin.net, where they can find more information about his upcoming courses. Just before we go, Tracy, what kind of things have you got coming up in the pipeline? Any upcoming kind of retreats that you're hosting or workshops or classes at all?
I'm on a few workshops in Lausanne and soon in Geneva, where I'll be yoga and the Swiss instrument, who's the Hang, will be played during some yoga session and meditation. And next year, I'll be in February, we'll be doing the retreat again in India.
Right.
And it's a full week of yoga and philosophy, an introduction into Ayurvedic and essential oils in natural medicine. It's a fantastic. It'll be in Goa, in a great place near the beach.
Oh, that sounds incredible.
And many more things will come up, will pop up. So it's
brilliant. Okay, Tracy, thanks. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you very much, John.
I wish you all the best.
You too.
And I'd just like to remind listeners that this interview with Tracy was part of the Warrior Addict Meet the Warriors podcast series, which can be accessed via www.warrioraddict.com. We really hope you enjoy listening. Thank you. And from Tracy and myself, until next time, goodbye.